How about this? It's homecoming at Ohio State. It's prime time at the Horseshoe on a Saturday night. It's October in the Big Ten. And just when you think it can't get any better than that, it's Freaky Friday on the beat. Welcome to the Austin and Berm Show. He is Berm. I am Austin. It is time for some bold predictions. Ohio State and Minnesota, the home Big Ten opener for the Buckeyes, 7:30 p.m. on NBC, just like everybody wanted.
Is that right?
I think
so.
Right?
Is that correct?
I've heard that the fans wanted night games. I know that they didn't. Ross Bjork and Ohio State may not have wanted homecoming to be at night, but here we are.
Yeah, I think it's fine. You know, whatever. I don't know why homecoming always has to be at noon. You know,
there's still plenty of events, man.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to go do stuff. People need to get over it. Go do some stuff. You know,
I don't know that anyone's actually complaining about it. It just was like a request that Ohio State had that once again, the broadcast partners were like, no, we bite our thumb at you Buckeyes, even though you make all the money here.
That is a reference that's been lost on to time, the biting of the thumb. Like, let's just be honest.
I think you should bring that back.
If you asked a single humanoid under the age of 18 if they know what it means to bite your thumb at someone, let's say you asked 1,000 humanoids under the age of 18 what that reference was meaning, how many do you think would get it?
I mean, do they not teach Shakespeare in high school anymore?
No, they don't.
Oh, well, you're
gonna
then
find
zero.
That out. You're going to find that out coming up in the next few years. That they actually don't teach anything in high school anymore. And your daughter is going to come home every day and you're going to be like, what did you do at school today? And she'd be like, nothing. And you're going to be like, you know, you couldn't have done nothing. And then she tells you what they did. And you're like, oh, it actually is nothing.
Yeah. Well, guess what?
Pretty terrible.
We're going to do something on this show because it is Friday. It's time for bold predictions. And Ohio State is favored to win this game, Berm, by 23.5 points. The over under right now is 44.5. So you did give a score prediction on Monday on the live show at Roosters. It is fueled by Tansky Power Sports. Has your number changed at all? Where do you sit as we kick things off right now?
I'm still pretty good at like 38-10. I think I'm good in that range. I think Minnesota with their quarterback, Drake Lindsey, can do some things through the air. I think he's pretty good. He's a better quarterback than Minnesota's had in a while, even more so than Ethan Kaliakmanis, who's now at Rutgers, who's playing pretty well for the Scarlet Knights, despite the fact that they still stink. I think they're going to score an offensive touchdown, and I don't think it's going to be a fluke play. I think they're going to have a drive where they actually score a touchdown on the Buckeyes. So that's like a bonus bold P. The Buckeyes' streak of not allowing a red zone touchdown this season, I think, is going to come to an end on Saturday.
Ooh, okay. That's putting a little spice.
I still don't know if Darius Taylor is back for Minnesota or not. Let's take a quick look.
Well, we'll get the availability report on Saturday. I mean,
Minnesota's.
Yeah, well, they'll get it. They have to post it on Saturday. But PJ Fleck, I don't believe, is one of those. I don't think he has one of the programs that puts out multiple availability reports throughout the week. And I don't believe that he's given any indication one way or another. I'm not sure that it matters. And who is that running back for Minnesota? Based on what we saw last week with Washington and Jonah Coleman, I think the Buckeyes, you know, they did give up a handful of gains on the ground, but I thought they took a big step forward in terms of the defense collectively, but also against the run. And maybe that's just, you know, the Ryan Day talking about Taiwan Malone and he graded out as a champion yet again, two games in a row at defensive tackle, that they feel like they're getting better play there. I don't think you can hope to come into the Horseshoe and play Ohio State and think that you can run the ball and win. I just don't think that that's the only reason that that happened last November was because Ohio State missed two field goals. So, yeah, it's not a winning strategy. It wasn't a year ago, and I definitely don't think it is now.
No, I don't think that it is either. I think Minnesota will throw the ball more than they rush it. Not just because they're behind. That's been their MO this year. But Darius Taylor is a pretty good player, and if you get him in the game and back healthy for Minnesota, he can be at least a guy who can make a cut or two in the red zone to make you whiff. That's been, 25 years since Minnesota beat Ohio State. I don't anticipate that will happen this weekend. And I think the Buckeyes will cover. I think the over will hit, and that's it.
Yeah, I've got the Buckeyes covering again. But I think that this methodical, slower tempo offense is here to stay. Efficiency being the order of the day for Ryan Day and Brian Hartline and that whole offensive staff, and then leaning still on this defense, which is the best in the country, and I think raising the ceiling even from what the national champions accomplished a year ago. So I think they'll be under by design. I think if Ohio State wanted to start smashing the over and betting on itself to raise money instead of counting on the Big Ten to go get venture capitalist funding, then it would push the tempo. It would throw the football all over the yard. It would go no huddle. When the opportunity arises or when that's required of them, I think we will see them do that. I don't think that there is a fear that they can't execute that offense or they can't ask more of Julian Sain. I think this is all consciously designed with 16 games, 17 games in mind for them. And I don't think that Minnesota is an opponent that will force the Buckeyes to deviate from that approach. So I think that they will win 34-6.
See, I just, how many possessions are you assuming Ohio State gets? Because let's say, so they had six active possessions against Washington. That's crazy. So let's just give it 50% more and they get nine. They're going to score on six of them. So I don't know, where are you getting 34? You got a couple field goals in there?
Yeah, four touchdowns and two field goals. I thought it was interesting, Berm, when I think we may have mentioned this at one other point on Snap Judgments during the week. I don't remember Ryan Day ever explicitly laying it out that the goal for Ohio State in the red zone was 75% touchdowns, because that's an area where you and I on Snap Judgments after games or last Saturday in Seattle be like, oh, well, here we go. This is the third time that there's been an empty possession. Now, that is a problem. You can't have the empty possessions, but they're not that far off from the 75% touchdown mark. They're two drives behind that rate currently, which, again, is below the standard that they set for themselves. But also, scoring touchdowns on 75% of red zone drives is a higher standard than like anybody. That is a lofty goal. It's not something that everyone accomplishes.
No, but you're Ohio State. You have all the best players. You should be able to figure it out. My point is 34 points in a game where they have a normal number of possessions means Minnesota did a pretty good job against Ohio State, regardless of how slow the Buckeyes' pace of play has been. So I think that's an interesting number. But you said 34-10?
Six.
34-6. So you got to cover and an under. Okay.
I do. And I don't like unders. That's not fun.
I get it.
I was way on the over last week at Washington, and that was not the right play because this Ohio State defense is clearly too good, and Ryan Day has got a plan to slow it down.
The Ohio State opponents are averaging 35 less points a game against Ohio State than they're averaging against everyone else. So Minnesota's averaging 20, like how many points a game? I don't know.
So they're going to score negative points on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious to me that they're going to score. They're averaging 25.5 points a game, so they're going to have negative 10.
Okay, so I will change my prediction to 34 to negative 10.
That makes sense. That's a reverse over.
That is the math. I'm sure it makes sense. All right, let's dive down. Let's drill down, Berm. I've got you kicking it off here, and it looks like, based on context clues, you're going to start in the Ohio State backfield.
I am. And the number we're looking for here is 263. 263 yards for Ohio State to run the ball as a team against the Gophers. Minnesota has given up 262 yards this season on the ground. Ohio State will run for more than that against Minnesota.
Oh, I see what you did there.
You like that?
They're better than those four opponents combined.
Correct. Correct. I think this is one of those opportunities for Ohio State where they know, again, as you mentioned in the open, like you can always just revert to Julian Sain in the passing game. You can always go back to it. But with the games coming up for Ohio State, you go to Illinois, you got Wisconsin, then you've got Penn State. You're going to need to run the ball. You're going to need to work some kinks out. And the running game has not been bad, especially with the addition of Bo Jackson as the bell cow. But I think you can really figure out this week against a pretty stout run defense, like where the holes are, what's the problems, what's causing the issues. And I think you're going to see Ohio State. And maybe that's going to cause some issues for my score prediction. Maybe that's going to cause some predictions or some prediction trouble with the number of possessions. I don't care. Buckeyes are going to run for more yards against Minnesota than the Gophers have surrendered all season long in their first four games. 263 or more rushing yards for the Buckeyes, led by number 25, Bo Jackson, who I think will have his first 20 game carry of his young career.
20 carry game?
Yep.
That's probably right. I think that's a saucy, spicy, accurate, bold prediction. Because I was really surprised that he led the way. I knew he was going to play last week. I didn't know to what extent to surpass and then double up really in carries Bo Jackson compared to C.J. Donaldson. I did not really anticipate that would happen. Ryan Day left plenty of context clues, which is why I believed that Bo Jackson would play extensively. But I didn't think that because he didn't start the game, he didn't get the first carry, but he got a starter's workload. And yep. I didn't think that that was going to happen by the time we got to the end of September.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the bigger surprises of the season. It's one of those reminders or perhaps a flashing, you know, one of those red lights, those sirens. Like in the future, when people start talking about freshmen early, we probably have to pay a little bit more deference to that conversation and not just brush it off and go, yeah, but he's a freshman. He's not going to like the world is changing. Things change, Mox, you know, time to go.
But I think it still goes back to the number one rule of the beat, which is when Ryan Day is talking into a live microphone, you pay attention to what it means. Like he didn't get that role. Bo Jackson did not get those opportunities until Ryan Day was saying, well, we're not seeing the fumbles in practice. We're not talking about pass protection. I think that there has to be some credit here to what Bo Jackson has done on the practice field to lead up to these Saturdays, because clearly he's approaching that in the right way.
Yeah, and I think he has more yards rushing this season than C.J. Donaldson and James Peoples combined, or is close.
Well, that's what happens when you have 200-yard outings in your first three games as a college football player.
Yeah, so C.J. Donaldson has 190 yards. Bo Jackson has...
Close to 300. I mean,
Bo Jackson has 297. James Peoples has 136. So they've got him slightly. They've got him just by about 27 yards.
Yeah, but that separation is coming. Because as we mentioned last week, they did find a way to get James Peoples involved, but they're not all three going to be getting an even workload. And I think even once you get to the secondary component, whether that it looks like that's still going to be C.J. Donaldson, and I think it should be based on the way he's played. You know, you're gonna have to find creative ways. James Peoples was involved a week ago, but it's not going to be like it was in the first couple of weeks because Bo is the one who's eating that piece of the pie.
And if you're watching this on YouTube or your preferred video platform, 10TV, 10TV Plus, YouTube or whatever, you'll see this photo of Bo Jackson where he's doing the thing that's the most important. There's 3 points of pressure on that football. He's not letting it go. He's learned his lesson. It's Bo time. 20 plus yards, 220 plus carries for him, 263 plus for Ohio State. That is bold prediction numero uno on this week's Freaky Friday.
Okay. I think Jeremiah Smith-Berm is good at football.
Well, you're really putting yourself out
there.
I know.
This show is known for its boldness, and I don't want to shirk away from those responsibilities.
Can't shy away now
that we've put on ourselves. The way Ohio State started the third quarter is why I say if Ohio State wants to air it out, if they get into a game where they feel like they have to push the tempo, if they feel like they get into a period of a game where it is too close for them, then they will flip a switch. Brian Hartline's got it next to him in the press box, and it's the JJ button. It's kind of like the old easy button. You just push it, maybe dial up play action. Doesn't have to be a deep shot. You just let Jeremiah run like a 10-yard out and terrify a cornerback who runs 20 yards past him the other way. Julian Sain gets an easy completion. The Buckeyes get a first down, and the stats rack up. Even at that pace that the Buckeyes played it a week ago, where Jeremiah was hardly a factor at all in the first half, and that was, I think, you know, you and I were texting with Spencer during the game. It's like Spencer Holbrook from Letterman Row. It's like, I wonder if you could get more than one target for 4.5. And Ohio State's recognized the same thing that we did and came out and immediately gave him two on the opening drive of the third quarter. They march right down the field. They score. Also, at the end of the second quarter, they realized that they had Jeremiah Smith as well. They ran that tunnel screen for him. He scored. And once that button was activated, and I can hear the counter to this, why don't you just do that on the opening drive of the game or throughout the first quarter? I get it. And I understand that frustration because I feel it too when I'm watching the game, and you just know what his upside is. But you also have to continue, I think, to, as you mentioned, with the running game and with Bo Jackson and everything else moving forward, you're going to get in games where you have to run the football. You have to work on that. You have to improve it. You have to get better. And the only way to do that is with reps and trying to do so. If things are difficult, you have the ultimate cheat code in four. I think we'll probably see that earlier in this game than we did against Washington. And I think that Jeremiah Smith will finish with 15 targets in this game, 13 catches, 168 yards, and two touchdowns.
So a couple career highs.
Yeah.
Or it's, at least a new career high for him.
He's going to keep pushing the envelope. That's what I anticipate.
13 catches is a lot.
It is, but I think that if we have, I think we have to adjust reasonable, rational expectations in how to attack teams, that it's the opportunity to just dial up a bunch of these deep posts and nine routes and flying down the field. Like, teams are not going to let that happen with the combination of Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. We've seen the blueprint, and we've seen Texas, and we've seen the double coverage, and we've seen the shells that are 30 yards down the field. Teams just are content to try and bleed a slow death. And I think that Ryan Day and Brian Hartline are okay with that. At least they showed that on that first drive of the third quarter, which is really the one that I'm honed in on, which is if this is what is available to Julian Sain and Jeremiah Smith, then take it. You can't go broke taking that profit. And one first down after another is going to get you into the red zone. And then we'll see if they can hit that 75% success rate for touchdowns once they get there. But I don't think that you can expect five home run balls to connect the game for Ohio State. I just don't think that defenses are going to allow that with the way that they're playing the Buckeyes.
No, you're right. Clearly, that's been the case this season. I'm just going to take your BP and tweak it just a little. Give a little tweak. If Jeremiah Smith has 13 catches, Jeremiah Smith will get 16 catches and break the Ohio State single game record for catches in a game. So if he's getting 13, you got to get him to 16 because you're very rarely going to get into that that atmosphere, that sort of productivity again.
It's just coming for all of Jackson's records.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson did it twice, and I'm sure he wished he would have done one more catch in that Rose Bowl or against Nebraska in 2021 when Garrett Wilson was out and CJ Stroud was like, I'm just going to throw it to Jackson Smith and Jigba all day long.
Turns out that was a good strategy. Yeah. All right, so
not bad.
Couple on offense, but we're not done yet on that side of the football, Berm.
Nope. Well, we are quasi-done.
Are we?
Brandon Ennis is going to return a punt for a touchdown in this game, period. So I know
you remember when we did this show and you would get to the end of bold predictions and I would take a special teams BP. Here we go. It's another punt return for a touchdown. It's never going to happen.
This is about framing, though. This isn't a special teams touchdown. This is a Brandon Ennis touchdown. Okay. And that is a different thing. He's been close to popping a punt return twice this year. Obviously, the last one finished with the fumble. I think Brandon Ennis is the type of competitor, and I think so highly of him, that I just think that a situation like what happened last week is just going to motivate him. Ryan Day comes out earlier this week, throws some support behind him and says, hey, Brandon doesn't fumble that ball. Nobody's asking if he's the right guy to return punts. I believe Brandon Ennis is still a guy that can make a difference in that vein for Ohio State and in that way for the Buckeyes. And I think it's going to happen this week. I think he's going to return a punt for a touchdown against Minnesota. And I think he's going to have a receiving touchdown just to shut some people up who think that the Buckeyes should find another option in the slot as well, because he had four catches or something last week. And I don't know why that's not enough for people, but Brandon has not shown the explosiveness that I think people anticipated from him this season. Why that is, I don't know. Again, sometimes it's like it's just perspective, and sometimes it's just the theory of relativity. Like if you're standing next to Jeremiah Smith and he's running, you're not going to look as explosive, so which is normal. But Brandon Ennis at his competitive streak is not normal. He is going to find some motivation this week. He's going to score two touchdowns. One of them is going to be on a return in the punt game. Highly unlikely it will be in the kick game, since Ohio State seems unwilling to return kickoffs.
I kind of thought that was a strange comment. I know what Ryan Day was saying on Tuesday, that those last two opportunities or last two games, one against Ohio, one against Washington, that Brandon Ennis showed the explosiveness that we've all been wanting, expecting, clamoring to see on special teams from the Buckeyes. But to say, well, if he didn't if he didn't fumble, like, we wouldn't be having this conversation. That's like, yeah, I had an awesome meal. Like, everything about it was amazing. And then there was a human finger in my dessert.
Yeah, like, it's like, well, if it wasn't for all the people dying from it, nobody would care if you did meth.
So I thought that was weird, because it's still true on special teams that if you fumble, the program is in your hands, just like if it's on offense or just like you give up a touchdown. And I'm like, I know that he was putting his support behind Brandon Ennis, and I know that he means that it's not happening in practice, which is why he's going to continue to have that. But it's like, that was like one of the stranger day quotes that I can ever remember from 7 years. Like, don't worry about that fumble. What are you talking about?
I think you have to look at it. What he's really saying is, I trust Brandon Ennis to get this figured out. That's what he's really saying. I trust that Brandon Ennis is the right guy for this job because we trust Brandon Ennis. Now, there is a point when you have to start asking yourself, how many human fingers can I eat in a salad before I realize that maybe I should order a burger?
Yeah.
But to this point, as long as there's a good enough barbecue sauce or something to dip that finger in, let's have it. Let's have some. Let's fry that bad boy up and eat it. I hope that Brandon Ennis shuts everyone up this weekend. And that's why he's on my list, because I too believe in and trust Brandon Ennis to do something big.
And a mistake like that on special teams also, like, Ohio State immediately within that game at Washington had its support behind him. I believe he had three catches after that. All of them ended in a, you know, hand spinning first down sign, not a finger in dessert, but a first down. They trust Brandon Ennis implicitly. And I think he's earned that. I think we all care and respect what he's done for Ohio State, which is why he's a captain. So I'm with you on that one. But it's not, he won't return a punt for a touchdown. That's foolish. Don't do things like that. Speaking of earning trust, Philip Daniels has done that in a hurry. He is, when you think back to the slobs of a decade ago, this guy, I think, would have fit in perfectly with the 2014 national champions. And he's given some of this edge. When Ryan Day was leaving the practice field on Wednesday and talking about being a desperate and hungry football team, I think Philip Daniels is the embodiment of that. He's exactly what you need. Now, he does sometimes push that edge to the breaking point. Also, Ryan Day told some stories about fights that were breaking out in practice in spring and having to shut it down completely and run 53s. We saw, even went out without the full pads on at the start of training camp. All 3 days, Philip Daniels getting in somebody's grill, and whether that was CJ Hicks or Bo Atkinson, starting fights with his own teammates. And I tell you what, I absolutely love it. I think that's what your starting tackles should do. I don't know that Austin Sarebelt has ever punched anybody. But he would if you pushed him to the edge. He has no problem fighting. And those two guys, you mentioned it with the position group on Three Thoughts Thursday, that most exceeded expectations. Austin Sarebelt is generally where we focus that conversation. But Philip Daniels has been so good and so reliable and so much more reliable than I think anybody anticipated, especially when it was like, okay, well, Ethan Onion was going to be the left tackle. Austin Sarebelt's at right tackle. Be great if Philip Daniels can be a swing guy and play guard. And he's like, nope. That's not what's going to happen here. And the work ethic and the commitment to getting better and settling in and getting comfortable has been fun to watch. And I do think he will get another penalty on Saturday, because he's going
to, is this going to you boldly predicting he's going to be penalized for punching someone?
I think he's going to get into another little bit of fisticuffs on Saturday, because a bunch of these people on the other part of the line of scrimmage were his teammates before. He doesn't have any concerns about punching current teammates in practice. So former ones in a game probably are going to have a chance to needle him, but he's going to get a personal foul penalty, but he's also going to have 4 pancakes in this game. And I think that's going to be key down there in the red zone. Philip Daniels, just keep your eye on 70. He's going to be important in this game.
This is interesting for a number of reasons. Number one, I think you're right. When you're talking about Philip Daniels and the edge and the attitude, nobody's going to know how to get into his craw more than his former teammates at Minnesota. I think that they harbor a little bit of resentment toward him, probably based on how quickly he was out of their program after starting 4 games last year. So I think that they're going to try pretty difficult or try to get him in some difficult positions by goading him a little bit, poking and prodding the bear, if you will. And in all the years we've been doing bold predictions, which this is probably now year seven of this.
Yeah.
We have never boldly predicted a number of pancake blocks before. So that is, it's a step in the right direction. A former colleague of ours would probably be like grateful for that opportunity to talk about the slobs in this way and to see productivity on their part in an actual number. So four pancake blocks, I like it. So we're talking in sum, four pancake blocks, at least one personal foul penalty on Philip Daniels.
Only one. I think he'll control himself after that.
He better. Not at otherwise, least he one. Won't play yeah. enough football to get into the four pancake block territory. But he's certainly been a difference maker for Ohio State, and you can see why Minnesota didn't want to let him go, why they might have been salty about Ohio State tampering or whatever, because Philip Daniels' family is related to Paris Johnson, and therefore, like, the tampering is pretty easy in that case when it's just a hey,
that's just a family conversation, bro.
This is just life in the big city. It's 2025. We know there's no rules. It's just okay.
Like, hey, Paris, did you like playing at Ohio State? I think I might have interest in going in the portal. And what's Paris supposed to do? I can't talk to you.
Yeah. Hey, man, you ever have any fingers in your salads? Hey, man, you ever eat a salad finger?
So here, well, hold on, Bert. So I said dessert because the fumble was at the end of the return. If you muffed the punt and dropped it on the ground, that's a salad. That you're having that as an appetizer.
Oh, well, lady fingers is one of the world's most popular desserts. So,
boy, it feels like a Freaky Friday on the beat. I tell you what. Anyway,
you like this? You like this? Do you like the title of the slab?
I do. If you are listening on Apple or Spotify or just the audio only podcast, Berm wrote for this bold prediction, which I assume must be about Kenyatta Jackson. It says, Kenya, repeat that.
Kenya, that's the important thing. Look, we know what Kenyatta Jackson can be for Ohio State. We know about his potential. We have seen flashes over the last 4 years, Saturday against Wisconsin or Washington or whatever wonderful, wild, woolly opponent they played last week was the best game he's ever played. And he'll admit it. And Mick Marotti told it to him after the game. And I told it to him after the game. And it's been discussed widely here and there and everywhere over the last 5 days. You just have to do it a lot. You have to be that guy. And I think that there is a lesson here. The fact that Ryan Day on Tuesday talked about the body language and said, hey, I've never seen his body language that good in a game. Once you realize that there might be a correlation between how you're preparing, how you're emoting, what you're putting into the game on the field actually has a direct translation to the output, then all of a sudden, I think it becomes easier to match that. And I think Kenyatta Jackson, that light probably comes on in a way that it hasn't before. And I think we are going to see him and the defensive line, thanks to this surge from Kenyatta, take a step forward on Saturday. And I think the Buckeyes are going to duplicate what they did against Washington with six sacks. But I think Kenyatta is going to have three of them this week. I think he's in for a major weekend. And I think it's a reminder to the national media, it's everyone watching Ohio State, that this defense, as good as it's been, as electric as it's been, as versatile and dynamic as it's been, is just starting to figure out all the different things that they can do with all these different guys. And when you add Kenyatta to that mix and you add a healthy Kenyatta to that mix and you couple him with Caden Curry and the productivity that you're getting out of the Cadens, all of a sudden this defensive line takes a step to the next level. And it doesn't have to be four or five, six guys. It just, as long as you've got three that are playing at that level, you can do a lot of different things. So it's time for Kenyatta Jackson to emerge and become the superstar of this defensive line. He took a major step this offseason in the leadership capacity. Now it's time to see how that translates to the field. And I think last weekend was a wake-up call for him that he desperately needed. And I think it's a reminder to him moving forward that he can make an impact on plays where he's not hitting the quarterback. He can do a lot of things. Energy is important. Caden Curry, Caden McDonald are showing that week in, week out. And now it's time for Kenyatta to juice himself up, you know, get a little juice, a little extra juice.
Yeah. We all saw that from Kenyatta Jackson, body language, productivity, getting into the backfield. He only got credit for one sack and one play in that game. Like, you look at the box score and it's like seems like you guys are making way too big a deal out of Kenyatta Jackson's game, but he was close on everything. I rewatched a number of those snaps just to be sure. It's like, we didn't imagine this, right? Like Kenyatta was around the football all day long, and he was just like, so were Caden Curry and so were Caden McDonald, and they got the credit in the stat sheet. But because I definitely thought I would look at it later and be like, well, he had to have had at least five tackles and like three tackles for loss. And that wasn't the case, but he helped set up a bunch of them as well.
Yeah. When your pass rush is forcing the quarterback to step up into the pocket or dance around, that opens up the door for guys like Caden McDonald to swallow someone up when they step into the pocket and have to try to climb in the pocket. And when you have the energy guys like Caden Curry and Caden McDonald, those are the guys that get the cleanup sacks. But those sacks, this wasn't the same as the Caden Curry sacks against Ohio, where he just like took a center and ragdolled him. This was, those were sacks that came as a result of coverage and pressure from the other side. And Kenyatta Jackson had a really great game, and I think it's going to only continue.
I think you mentioned on Saturday after the game, it's like if you're nitpicking Matt Patricia's defense, which is a crazy thing to do with someone who's got given up 22 points and two touchdowns in four games, it's like, hey, where are those turnovers now? Now you're getting sacks and tackles for loss. What about an interception or two thrown in the mix? I think he'll just scheme some up this week. And I think the beneficiary is going to be Lorenzo Styles Jr. The natural inclination is to take IGB playing at a really high level, Caleb Downs, who was the ultimate chess piece. But, you know, I think it's a fear of Caleb Downs and the identification of quarterbacks. Like, wherever he is, that's a different direction that I'm going to go with the football. And if that is the case, I think you could like slide Lorenzo in front of a slant or something on the backside. And I don't think it's going to go for a touchdown, but I just have a feeling that, you know, that nickel defender spot is going to be one that's critical here. As you mentioned, Minnesota's throwing it more than they typically do. And if that's the blueprint that they want to follow against Ohio State, I think it could lead to a number of the sacks that you're talking about, opportunities for the pass rush to get home, and probably a rash decision at quarterback for Minnesota. And I think Lorenzo will pay that off, and we'll see a turnover and yet another thing that you can add to this burgeoning resume for Matt Patricia with the Silver Bullets, which is already impressive enough on its own and hasn't needed takeaways to be dominant.
Yeah, Drake Lindsey's thrown two this season, so that's less than Julian Sain has thrown. He's been good with the football. He's been careful, but they're going to have to take some shots and take some risks if they want to try to pull off an upset on Saturday. And when you do that against the Ohio State defense, that leads to tip balls, that leads to balls being batted at the line of scrimmage, and that means that there's opportunities out there for trouble.
Interception, and I think he'll make four tackles as well. We'll just drill down on that a little bit more, because one interception, how spicy is that?
Yeah, that's say it was pretty gonna be boring.
I know. So we'll kick it up a notch.
That's barely even a finger in your salad. You need more than that.
Yeah, drop.
I need a toenail in there as well.
Oh, great. Well, I was just going to say, have a fantastic weekend, and I hope you have some wonderful food, and then Burn put that thought into all your heads to wrap it up.
Try not to eat any toenails this weekend, America, because that's disgusting.
Stop it. No one was even thinking about toenails,
America. Burn. No. Okay. Everyone listening to this, watching this, I want you to look around the room you're in and just wonder to yourself, how many people in the room you're currently sitting in have eaten their own toenails? I bet you it's more than zero. I bet you.
I didn't know that was such a problem across this country. But
it's a national epidemic.
Well, the more you know. If you've thought that the last few Freaky Fridays have been too normal on the Austin and Berm show, well, we've made up for that today. We are fully.
This is what happens when I only drive to Columbus 2 days this week. My brain starts to. I start didn't to get even all...
didn't see you for your birthday celebration on Wednesday at the Woody. I mean, I was rattled. I'm just so used to you being there. But thanks to Spencer Holbrook for filling in. Now it feels normal. Now I'm having fun. Now I'm ready for homecoming weekend. 7:30 in the Horseshoe, Ohio State, Minnesota. We have drilled down six bold predictions, a couple score calls, over unders. Hope you're ready for this one. It's the only opportunity in the Horseshoe for the month of October, which is a crazy thing, but enjoy it. Make the most of it. We will be talking to you before the game with pregame keys. We'll have the notebook and snap judgments, of course, as we always do afterward. But have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you at the Horseshoe. He's Berm. I'm Austin. So long.
AI has taken over the internet, Wrong answers, made up facts. He asks a simple question and get a generated essay nobody asked for. Technology trying to decide for you and still getting it wrong. The internet didn't used to be this way. When you just want to search anything online and find what you need, Startpage is the private search engine that keeps it simple. Real links, less noise, and we don't keep track of what you asked. Try Startpage at startpage.com. That's startpage.com.